there was a trust we formed the last time I was here. And so I do feel comfortable talking about this with you.
We've been living in this world where all these guys are just kind of playing video games and sitting in air-conditioned rooms and driving automatic transmission cars.
And I tell people that if you're comfortable going to the grocery store, you should be comfortable going to the hospital.
You're listening to Sex with Emily. We're talking about sex, relationships, and everything in between. For more information, check out sexwithemily.com, and you can find us on all social media. It's Sex with Emily across the board.
Look into his eyes. They're the eyes of a man obsessed by sex. Eyes that mock our sacred institutions. Bedroom eyes, they call them in a bygone day.
So today we got a lot to talk about. We are talking about, first, my guest, we're talking about interracial couples making it work during such a tumultuous time right now. There's a lot of dating stigmas on the apps. That's been happening for a long time. And we're joined by my special guest, Erin Tillman, known as the Dating Advice Girl. You can find her on Instagram at Dating Advice Girl. There's no I in girl. It's Dating Advice Girl, G-R-L. You can also find us on Instagram. We just did a post at Sex with Emily. You can do it and you can easily follow her there and check it out. She's had some great content and some great advice. Always, but even recently, Erin, welcome to the show. I'm so excited to have you back because first off, we did a podcast a few weeks ago, and what did we call that podcast? I don't know what we called it, but you can find it. Do you remember what it's called? The Dating Advice? We'll find it in a second. But if you want to hear more with Erin, it was Sex and Shame, Sex and Shame. And we had such a great talk that I was like, we got to keep going. So here she is today. How you doing, Erin? Thank you for joining me.
Hey, Emily. Thanks for having me back. I'm really happy to be back. I wish it was under different circumstances, but actually I'm glad it is under these circumstances. I feel like this is a safe space to talk about these things. And also I feel like specifically race and dating and also to your audience, who some of them might not know all the things about Black people. And maybe they haven't dated interracially. Maybe they've dated one person that was Black in their life. And so I think that this is a really great platform for all of us to learn together. So that's my long-winded way of saying thanks for having me back.
Yeah, of course. I mean, no, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I think that this is such a great platform. There's so much that you can share right now under these circumstances. I'm glad you can be here. And I know that there's a lot to talk about, but I did want to talk to you about, like, to start off, like, interracial dating, because that is something, you know, I feel like, you're in an interracial relationship right now. So maybe we can just talk about that. Like, how have you been navigating this difficult time and making it work? You had some great posts. I was actually enthralled by your Instagram post that you did with Jet and your partner. And I just thought you brought up so many great points about it. I was like, wait, what'd she say? I went back, was like listening to it. So yeah, how's it going? Really?
People can check that out. Yeah, as well. It's been, to be honest, and again, I want to keep it tight because I'm super long-winded. But yeah, the last week, let's just go ahead and say, you know, the pandemic happened. We were sequestered in our houses for months. That was already hard enough, right? Then there's a statistic that, you know, Black Americans are dying more from COVID. Great. Okay, so then, you know, all the shootings that have happened in the last, just since the pandemic, or that we've been become aware of since the pandemic, it's been a really hard time, to be honest. Most Black people I know, including friends and family members, it's just been like literally all of the emotions. So it's not been a great time, to be honest. And I think the fact, you know, things are opening up now, but the fact that we've been isolated at home has not helped. It was a glorious thing to see people marching in the streets. The peaceful protesting and such, it's been great. That has brought some happiness into my life, that people care. So that's how I'm doing. I'm actually in a really, I was saying right before we started, I'm in a really positive place at the moment, though. I'm very hopeful right now. I'm happy to see all the conversations that are happening, the productive conversations. I'm also happy that all of us are able to see the people in our life who aren't supportive and who aren't wanting to learn and expand. I think that's really important that we see those people right now. Don't ignore those people. Either you don't ignore them in a way of trying to educate them, or you don't ignore them in the place of, oh, I see who you are. I'm going to make a choice about where I'm going to place you in my life now. I think it's really important for our mental health. You're the doctor, but I think it's really important for our mental health right now to make those choices and to really listen to what people are putting out there, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're so right. Because if COVID wasn't a filter enough to be like, okay, these are the people that I actually miss and that I want to see. I realized a lot during that. But now, absolutely, it's like, who is showing up? Who's sharing your beliefs? Who's actually going to be listening and working? I know for me, like I've been doing a lot of listening, a lot of work the last, you know, few weeks. You were talking about how, you know, this fight is about your existence, you said, you know, when trying to explain, like, why should your friends care? And I think you're so right. I was at a birthday party and I just found that some people that there were like, well, I think if they're kind of blowing it up or it's not a big deal. And these are friends that are like socially conscious, like they believe in a lot of causes I do. And I just had this moment where I was like, I don't agree with you. And I haven't been in that position where I was like, this is what I've learned. And it was really, it was just a moment where I thought, okay, these might not be my people in that way. So I think you're right now. I think we all have to be paying attention to who are we aligned with? What are they aligned with our core values? We need people out.
I realized I did not answer your question about Jet, my partner. I will weave that into what I'm going to say about what you just said.
We're here.
You know, what's really interesting to me too is that I've noticed that too. I mean, I have a lot of white friends in particular say, I can't believe this friend said this. I too, Emily, have had to unfriend quite a few people and have some really hard conversations with some people who I've known for 30 years, 30 years in my life. And this is the moment now where they've shown that, for example, looting is more important. The looting that happened a week ago or two, but it's not happening anymore, is more important than what's happening. To me, that speaks volumes. And, you know, I think also in this conversation, it's difficult because I think there's so many ways this conversation with you and I could go right now. One of the things that's happened for me in my life is there's a lot of childhood stuff that's coming up. So I grew up in an all white town in Ohio, small town, Ohio, only black person in my grade, one of five in my school or something. And, you know, there was always this narrative of you're different, Aaron. I see what those black people are doing, but you're different. So, you know, you wouldn't get stopped by the cops or you wouldn't do this or you wouldn't do that. And it's like, I'm no different. I could very well be Breonna Taylor. She was sleeping in her home. So all that to say, you know, I think that sometimes, you know, I'll speak to the liberals right now, liberal white people. I think that sometimes liberal white people do a lot of good, but I think there's blinders put on because of past things that have been done. I've donated to this. I support this. I've done this. That there's sometimes not a willingness to look inward as well. And this is a moment where, regardless, like I as a black person have had to look inward right now.
Right.
We're not immune. None of us are immune right now. We all need to take a look. This is literally, not to get too deep about it, but I feel like what we're watching is evolution. We're literally watching humanity evolve at this moment. And so it's kind of like, where are you willing to get on this evolution train right now? Because it's happening. And this is the moment to kind of prove how much you really care about humanity at a very fundamental level. You know, am I your equal? You know, do I deserve the same opportunities? Do I deserve to feel safe when I'm outside? You know, I had a thing happen here in Los Angeles the other day where there was a group of cops doing a thing. I'm not into cops. I've had cops in my life. I've had military in my family. So it's not that. I literally have to psych myself up right now to go outside of my house because I don't know how I'm going to be perceived in the street. I do want to go back though. I don't want to digress too much. Jet, my boyfriend, he's amazing. I made a good choice.
Good.
He's a real good choice of partner. You know, when we met, we've been dating for about a year. We met on Tinder. I think I probably mentioned that last time I was on the show. A success story, because there's a whole bunch of not good stories on Tinder. But I've dated quite a few white people in my life. And I think it's just part of that is, you know, where I grew up in Ohio, being around mostly white people. I think there's a lot of reasons for it. And I've dated a lot of really amazing white people. I just wrote an article for a newspaper in Salt Lake City. And one of the things that came up was, I don't think a lot of my past white partners would make it right now. I think this would be the breaking point in our relationship.
Yes.
And
wow,
I think
really?
That's because in my life, most of my white exes have said I was the only black person or first black person they've ever dated. So, you know, when that happens, there's conversations that come up. You're like, listen, my personality normally is light and airy and fun. And that's what people right. like about me. So this has been really jarring for a lot of people in my life for me to be yeah. like talking about serious stuff. I've unfriended people. Some people have unfriended me because they're like, this is way too serious. And I'm like, well, this is,
yeah.
You know, if what is friendship then? What is a relationship?
Exactly.
Let me wrap it up. You know, Jet, my partner, bring it back to him. When we met a year ago, I learned from all my past experiences dating and with friends. I was like, there are certain questions I need to ask right now. Like first, second, third date. Okay. Like, do you have any other Black people in your life? How do you feel about, you know, is it weird for you dating me or being out in public with me? I know that's a really weird question to ask, but obviously not in 2020. Like, we still need to ask some of those questions. He grew up in a small town in Texas with Black people, with brown people. That made me feel more comfortable. Yeah. And sure enough, during this, he has been so amazing. Emily,
well,
so
I love
amazing.
This. Well, let me just tell people who you are, Erin. Again, if you're just joining us, I'm talking to Erin Tillman. She's the dating advice girl. You can find her on Instagram, GRL. And we're talking about, you know, well, there's so many things we talk about. Because first of all, you're a dating coach and you help people. We had a great chat. It seems like it was years ago now that I talked to you, much later times. So what do you think, though, is happening right now? Like, how are people dealing? What do you think is going on with interracial couples? Like, do you think there's specific things that are coming up? I know that you're doing well in your relationship, which I love to hear that. But what do you think, what do you think is going on with couples right now? What do you think they're navigating?
Yes. From a coaching perspective, I know, and again, I can put my professional dating empowerment hat on. I've been a coach for 12 years in the dating relationship space and consent space as well. And from a professional and a personal perspective, there are couples that are very much struggling right now. I've had a few conversations with friends in my life who are dating, who have a Black partner. So either, you know, the guy is Black, the girl is Black, both people, whatever, regardless of orientation. It's a hard time if the couple hasn't had these conversations before. And, you know, again, like literally 2019, right? Things were light and airy compared to now. Light and fun and festivals and right. Vegas and like all these things, right? It's like another yes. lifetime.
It really and was. So,
right. And so, you know, in a lot of ways, why would you need to have had those conversations? Someone approaches you on a dating app or in a bar or something, like, again, pre-COVID. And it's like, oh my God, you're cute. I'm cute. Yes, let's go out. And so, you know, again, like I mentioned before, there's been a lot of stuff that's come up for me in the last week that I haven't really thought about since I was like in school, you know? Really? And so a lot of Black people are dealing with that. There's some deep, deep trauma that is popping up for us right now. And so if you're in a couple, for the couples who are out there, you know, who've maybe never discussed things, race things, or race things to this depth, this is a big eye opener. I mean, right. I've been in relationships before. This is the moment for some couples where they might have to call it quits. There might be, and or there might be a fundamental thing that pops up in this that Black person might not feel safe anymore. You know, yeah. if somebody says, say there's a Black and white couple, and the Black person says, you know, like I said before, like, I don't feel safe out there. And the white person says, oh, it's not a big deal. Like, just come, nothing's going to happen to you. Like, that is traumatic. To feel yeah. like you're not being seen or heard or believed, that your feelings are like not real or like invalid, that's happening right now.
Well, I'm sure
the other thing that's happening yeah. really quickly is there's a lot of conversation about interracial children. I have a few friends who have biracial children, and in both situations, the mother is white and the father is Black. And in one situation in particular, the white mom said something like, I'm going to shield my kids from what's happening. My biracial kids who are part Black, because I think I'm just going to teach them to be a good person. Right. They don't need to be fearful like you are. And I said, oh my God, listen to, please, please, please. Yeah. If you don't listen to anything else, please listen to me. That's not going to help. Like, yes, it's important. Yes. Yes. Be positive in all these things, but they need to know what's happening out there, and they need to know, but they need to be careful. And I'm like, yeah. All of a sudden getting emotional because I'm like, that is so hurtful to hear that a mother is so like not wanting to be a negative person, that they're not wanting to tell their kid about what's happening. It's not mm-hmm. okay. And that is super dangerous.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, Erin. You're so right. We have to have difficult conversations with our kids, no matter what color their skin, but especially in this case. I mean, you're so right. I think we're so afraid. We want to make this perfect world of, like, you know, rainbows and sunshine. And that's just not the reality. If not now, when? Really?
Absolutely.
God, Erin, you're so right.
This is now the time.
Well, it's so interesting, Erin. You're saying so many great things here, because even you said maybe that you haven't thought about this since college or since you were in school, and that now, like, maybe you would have been dating one of those people who maybe wasn't telling his parents that he was dating a Black woman, or he, you know, he's like, oh, so some of his friends would make jokes and maybe it would have been okay. But now it's like, no way is any of that okay. So I think there's probably a lot of people in interracial relationships who are hearing this and saying, oh yeah, it's not okay. I'm not going to close my eyes to it. I'm not going to ignore my children or my friends or my aunt or my grandmother or anyone in my family who is racist and who isn't okay with my choices.
I mean, I was on homecoming court in school, and I was pretty sorry. I'm like all snotty now.
No, I know. This is the time.
This is real.
This is it. No, but like, thank you for coming on and talking about this. Real. This is real. We gotta bring this up.
So yeah. So in school, you know, I was pretty popular in school. Like, I was, you know, homecoming court and student government and all these things. And going back to homecoming court and I was prom princess and all these things. I remember I never had a date to the dances. Never. I loved dance. I grew up dancing. So I was at all the school dances. And then when I was on homecoming court, it's like, great. So I went with one year, I went with my gay friend, and another year I went with like a bunch of girlfriends. And I always felt like there was something wrong with me. I'm like, why is it that like all these girls get boyfriends and people ask them out and I'm not? I thought I was ugly. I thought all these things, right? Cut to like 15 years later at a high school reunion or something, I had like three boy classmates tell me that they had a crush on me, that they wanted to ask me out, but they couldn't because their parents were racist. At least three in the years. And like every year there's like some new reveal of somebody who's like, oh my God, like, just, I want to let you know. And I'm like, weirdly, that's really healing though, because I thought there was something wrong with me. And it was not, it was their parents. It was the parents saying, you can't talk to her or date her or whatever. And I'm like, dude, that's so deep. And so for like real quick, I know we got a break for the couples going, like couples happening right now, interracial couples whose parents or grandparents or family members are not on board. At some point, if your partner has your back, you got to just live your life and cut that out mentally, energetically, and maybe even like in terms of like cutting them out of your life. You know, because it is so damaging. It's so damaging to have people who are family or, you know, not blood family, but by marriage, like shun you. Like, it's not okay. And it's hurtful. And you got to practice huge levels of self-care right now. It's so important.
Erin, thank you. You're absolutely right. This is so helpful. This is the time. And this is the time we have to speak up and pay attention to the people around you. And the change is happening. It's here. Erin Tillman, thank you so much for being here. I so appreciate it. I love having you on. You just got to come back. We got to keep talking. Take care of yourself. People can find you at The Dating Advice Girl. What else do we got right now? Where else can they? You got a lot. I know you have your book on consent and anything else we got to.
I do have a podcast that I've had for like 10 years at this point. It's intermittent. And right now I'm bringing it back just to talk about specifically this topic, race and dating. I think it's really important. So it's called the Dating Advice Girl podcast, and it's on different platforms. And I know I probably should mention it because you have a podcast too.
This stop. First off, even before this, I'm all about bringing in other people's voices all the time. Talk about podcasts. There's a lot of podcasts and people should listen to you because I love listening to you. I could talk to you all night. Thank you for coming on, Erin. I so appreciate it. Erin Tillman, Dating Advice Girl. Thank you for being here. All right, I'm going to take a quick break. I am Dr. Emily. This is Sex with Emily, and we'll be back. There's nothing quite like sinking your teeth into a good sandwich. But listen, carb guilt is real. I'm someone who's very invested in my health, and I like to get my carbs from oats and beans and fruits and not bread. But I love bread, so here's my hack. Thanks to Hero Bread, you can enjoy your favorite bready delights without the carb consequences. Hero Bread has turned those carby, empty calorie bread products into fluffy, delicious breads that boast 0 to 1 net carbs per serving, 0 grams of sugar, and are packed with loads of fiber and protein. The first time I tried their white bread, I was skeptical. Could it really taste good with such impressive nutritional stats? Well, I'm pleasantly surprised to say it absolutely does. The texture is just phenomenal. It's like this soft, airy, and it just toasts up like a dream. I've whipped up everything from grilled cheese to PB&J and even made enchiladas, wraps, and tacos with their tortillas. Each time, Hero Bread has been a game changer. And here's the kicker. Despite its light texture and great taste, Hero Bread fits perfectly into my health goals. It's been adding more fiber to my diet while keeping the sugar at bay. Whether I'm packing a picnic lunch, planning a road trip snack, which I often do, or prepping French toast for breakfast, Hero Bread is my go-to. So whether you're craving a classic sandwich, a burger, or a hearty bun, or even indulging in a low net carb croissant, Hero Bread is something for everyone. And I highly recommend checking their monthly small batch drops out so you can try goodies like the 1 gram net carb Hero Cheddar Biscuit and so much more. You won't believe what they have. So you ready to kick carb guilt to the curb? Head over to hero.co and snag 10% off your order with the code Emily. That's Emily at hero.co. You're joined by Adam. I'm sure he doesn't need an introduction, but Adam is a radio personality, a podcaster, actor, host of the Adam Carolla Show, New York Times bestselling author. One of my favorite Adam accolades is that he co-hosted Loveline with Dr. Drupinski, same show that I was on for so long. Not so long, not as long as Adam. But our paths didn't really cross there. But Adam, I'm excited for you want your old job back. Did you want to get some penis questions tonight, Adam?
Sure. I love cock, so.
Well, I thought that you might miss it. But I'm excited. You're here to talk about your book, I'm Your Emotional Support Animal, which was just released on June 16th. We're going to get into that. But I was thinking about you, Adam, because the other night I was on with Drew's show, you know, one of his many shows, his like Daily Dose show. It was like the Periscope. And he was saying, we were talking about Loveline though. And he said, isn't it all the same? Or he said, what's new now? What's new? What are people talking about? I said, to be honest, he did Loveline for 30 years. You did it for 10 plus years. Nothing's changed. If anything, it's the same questions. And it's getting worse right now because speaking of cock, men's penises are malfunctioning at an alarming rate right now, Adam. And I think it might tie into some of the stuff. You didn't know that. That's why you're here. I can tell you all the things that are happening since you left the sex industry. I mean, you know.
I hear stories about testosterone levels going down and everyone is, you know, getting fat and irritated and, you know, people. Here's what I believe. I believe we were meant to go out and sort of chop some wood and, you know, pump a well and, you know, kill an animal on occasion and butcher that animal. Like, we were meant to kind of go out and sweat a little bit for our food. And we're not doing that anymore. It's all Grubhub now. Mm-hmm. And not only is it all Grubhub, but like, guys don't go in the garage. Guys don't turn wrenches anymore. You push a button, your car runs. You know, there is no problem solving. There is no, as I was thinking about this whole pandemic thing, there is no relationship with danger anymore. I always worked as a carpenter, and you had to know what each tool did and how potentially dangerous it may have been. You know, if you take a look at a sawzall or a bayonet saw, or reciprocating saw, whatever it is. It's
one of those.
It's big and it can have a blade on it that's a foot long and it's got sharp teeth on it and there's no cover, or there's no safety on it. Like if you don't use it right, you're going to hurt yourself. So we've been living in this world where all these guys are just kind of playing video games and sitting in air conditioned rooms and driving automatic transmission cars. And nobody's really out getting dirty if you're going to fire up a chainsaw and go at a tree all day, you're going to have to kind of have a relationship with danger and safety. And you have to be awake and alert. You have to be present. You know, everyone's always talking about, you know, being present in the sense of, you know, meditation or being present in front of your kids. How about how present you'd have to be to operate a chainsaw?
Right. And then you'd be practicing those muscles in your brain. You'd actually know how to do it, right?
We got away from that world completely. And now everyone's got an allergy and everyone needs an emotional support dog to travel with. And it's just kind of,
right.
Guys are just eating themselves.
In your book, I'm Your Emotional Support Animal, what you're referring to, which is, I loved your last chapter. I felt like it was your self-help guide, though you would never call it. It was called From Primates to Postmates. Mm-hmm. And what you're talking about is that we're just lazy now. Everything can be delivered. We get our Postmates. We don't have to hunt and kill. We don't, you were talking about your Roomba, you know, vacuum cleaner. And like, that's a problem now, like changing the batteries and all this. You know, I believe that it's just sort of, yeah, we're lazy and we're not using our brains as much and we're not out there. I mean, I think it's hot if someone's out there with a chainsaw chopping down a tree. Do something.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
It's another thing too, where it's like guys don't really do that. Women don't really put an emphasis on that. You know, as somebody who does a lot of home improvement projects and works with a lot of tools, it's never really been, it's been kind of a neither here nor there issue. I mean, women aren't particularly attracted to it anymore. Maybe they were.
Hey, don't speak for all women. I love a man right. who knows his way around a toolkit. Like, be useful in that way.
Yeah, so. No, I completely agree. And I don't know physiologically and psychologically exactly all that is happening in this period, but I would recommend that men go build a treehouse for your kid and or go in the garage and start working on something, and women go out in the garage, go work on the treehouse with your man, or go plant a garden or make some lasagna, but don't just sit around and order Grubhub. You'll go insane.
Yeah, it's true. And we're all just so attached to our phones, and we don't actually, maybe this is a new, I know you probably need another job, but maybe that would be a fun thing, Adam, like another show where you're actually, okay, I know this is what you did years ago, but these days, I don't even think that men have tools. They know how to do it. You can make it fun for them. Like, I would tell you, I will endorse that if a guy's out there building something and doing something with his hands and he's not playing video games, because that is not hot, to me. I'm like, do something more useful. And you could teach them, because I think their dads didn't teach them. They don't know how to do it. They grew up in Los Angeles or wherever. So, you know, I grew up in Michigan. I know in your book, you were talking about how I grew up with everyone washing their cars on the weekends. That's what was happening. We were outdoors and playing in the yards with all the kids and riding bikes. And it was, you know, we were in nature. We were doing things like that, but not anymore.
Yeah. I know no one's dad is really showing him the ropes. I'm kind of trying to do that with my son a little bit, but it's kind of an uphill battle. Like, people just don't want to do stuff they can farm out. You know, I mean, they've literally farmed out farming. They'll farm out everything they can farm out. Like, you know, your phone breaks, you throw it away. Your TV breaks, you throw it away. You know, everything's just kind of throw it away. And they don't realize that there's a kind of a nobility in fixing things and repairing things and figuring out what would be the best way and kind of improvising. You know, I work on a lot of cars. I have a lot of guys who work on a lot of cars. And, you know, I feel like those are some of the happiest, most sort of self-actualized guys I know, guys who like fix things, work on things, because they're problem solving all day, you know?
Yeah, it's a different part of your brain that you're working when you're actually doing something like that. Because when you're, you know, staring into your phone, you're not necessarily using those parts of your brain that I think are so important for survival, for self-actualization, for a lot of things, for a lot of different skills that are just sort of atrophying. Like, our brains are sort of atrophying from not being as active. But I don't know how you do it. I mean, I know you're trying to do a good job as a dad. Sonny, right? Your kids, Sonny and
right.
Your twins. How old are they now? 14?
15? Yeah, I just turned 14.
Okay. Wow. And you've said in your book too, because I really, and your book is great, Adam. It's like talking to you. It's like your rants, right? Except for I'm not talking, you're just talking. But you do say you want to round up all the dead. I thought for Father's Day, we could talk about this. You want to round up all the deadbeat dads because you're blaming them. You think they're to blame for our weak culture right now. for men in our culture. So what could we do differently?
Well, I think we're proving it, but I don't think it's going to work to kind of remove the dads from the equation or make it optional for the dads to raise their kids or to at least not judge those dads who choose not to be involved with their kids. There's a very negative effect that happens to young girls with no dad. And then there's a negative, separate and different version of that for young boys. But either way, it's bad. And any society or any group that has less dads is just going to have more crime and more drug dependency and more, you know, more addiction and more spousal abuse, and like more of all the stuff we don't want. So we're going to have to start figuring out a way to keep dads in the picture. And we're going to have to do it like we do anything. Like, I live in California. Every 5 years, there's a drought. And they work on their drought. Like, they do this awareness thing, and they put it up on the freeway signs. And they also give you incentive, like negative incentive. Like, hey, if you're washing your car in the driveway or you're hosing down your driveway and the neighbor calls you in, you're going to get fined for, like, you know, you're going to get a ticket for using too much water. Yeah, whatever it is they're doing. The point is this. They end up cutting water use by 40%. So they launch a campaign and it's effective. So what I'm saying is where's the campaign? Where's the conversation? How come it's not discussed? It's a big problem. The families falling apart is a big problem in our culture now. And it's neither here nor there. It's like there's something the government needs to do to fix it. I don't think the government is going to fix this.
No.
I think the family's going to fix it.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I think there's a lot of challenges we have right now with families and with parenting and just being better humans, right? I mean, how do we, with everything going on?
I think you have to create better humans. And if the family is a mess, it's really hard to spit out a good human.
Right.
I don't feel like schools create good humans. I don't feel like after school programs, I don't feel like that stuff really is very effective at creating good humans. I think good families do a better job at creating good humans.
Or if we don't have good families, since we know there's so many, you know, homes with, you know, one parent, single parent community, like having people around you. And I think that's the thing that I miss too, is that having, you know, we don't have the relatives nearby. Maybe you do. Maybe you have relatives near. I don't know if you guys do. Do you? Parents?
Yeah.
Anything? So that was such a nice thing when you could kind of have that. Even if they drove you insane, at least you had other people, aunts, uncles, cousins that could help. But right now, you know, a lot of people weren't from California or wherever they live. We move away from our families. So we don't have that kind of support anymore. So we have to work on ourselves to become better humans. You know what I also liked, Adam?
Hmm.
I mean, your book.
Thank you.
I'm more excited about your book than you are. What is that?
I wrote
it. I'm your emotional support animal, Adam Carolla. What'd you say? You're over it?
I wrote it, so I was kind of there, you know. It's a good book, though. I'm proud of it, and people seem to really like it. Yeah.
Thank you, Adam Carolla.
Thanks, Emily. Appreciate
so
it.
So great to see you. Talk to
great
you soon.
To see you.
Best of luck. Bye. Say hi to Lynette.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Adam.
Bye-bye.
Bye. I love having Dr. Edward Cartman on the show. He's a board-certified urologist and men's health specialist, and we're going to cover a lot of things. But let me just say this. If you have a penis in your life, you have a penis, you have a penis that you are fond of, that you care about, all those questions, this is the night. He is your guy. We also, some things we want to talk about is just generally the safety of going to the hospital for elective surgery right now with COVID. How, you know, what is going on with that? How can you do that safely? Getting back to life after COVID, the consequences of COVID and all those things. You know, it's always COVID. We're always a COVID open zone. You can always talk about that because I think that is what's up. You can find him at healthy-mail.com. And yeah, all things penis. Hi, Dr. Cartman.
Hi, Emily.
Hi, it's good to see you on Zoom.
This is a different format for us. Been in the studio, been on the phone, but now we're doing a Zoom call.
Exactly. I feel like the last time I saw you, was it February something? It was one of the last fun nights I've had. We went out for dinner after the show. I feel like it was February.
It was right before everything COVID. Went to hell. Yes.
We did not know this was going to be our future then. And that was good time. But thank you for, joining us. Exactly. Now we know. Well, how have you been doing? Tell me. How's how's business, the penis business and everything else?
It's starting to pick back up. So we had this pause in elective surgeries for about 6 to 8 weeks. And we were all anticipating this huge glut of patients coming in with COVID. So they essentially told us we can't do any elective surgeries. And patients didn't want to come in to see us in the office. I think my practice slowed down to about 40% of the volume that I normally see. I was surprised that even 40% of the people were coming in, but it just shows you how important sex and sexual health are to people, that despite this COVID epidemic pandemic we're having, people are like, I'm still coming in to see you. I need my testosterone. I need my pills. I need to talk about options. And then we saw a whole bunch of new problems arising from COVID, which I haven't seen to this extent in a long time.
Okay. Tell me everything. I want to hear what's going on. What did you see?
Well, what I think is underappreciated is the anxiety and depression that the quarantine has caused our society. And sexual health, especially erectile function, is so dependent on having a stress-free, no anxiety, no depression kind of atmosphere in your life. And I was starting, I would see guys who are in their 20s and 30s coming in before for sexual problems because of work-related stuff. You know, these are high stressed out executives or stressed out tech kind of people who are working really long hours. And you'd see that. But I mean, it got amplified to this exponential degree that I'd never seen. And I mean, people coming in with serious anxiety and stress disorders, 25-year-old guys complaining of erectile dysfunction, 30-year-old guys complaining of new onset urinary problems. Just all these crazy things. And it was almost chronologically, temporally related to what happened. It happened, it started developing in these guys a couple weeks, maybe a month after the quarantine started. I don't know how you're doing, but I mean, I don't like to be quarantined. I don't think anybody likes to be quarantined.
No, I like being out and seeing humans and talking and being in my fabulous studio and all the things. It's been rough. It's been a huge adjustment. And so... yeah, I mean, it hasn't been easy, but I'm talking to Dr. Edward Cartman. He's a urologist. He's a men's health specialist. So Dr. Cartman, what you're saying is that, because we've talked about this before, you've been on the show a few times, and we have a lot of great podcasts that we've done with you as well, if you want to, guys can check those out. But we were saying that there is a rise in erectile dysfunction with men in their 20s and 30s that we were never seeing before. And that's just interesting in itself, because I agree with you just in my years, I've seen that more. But you're saying even during COVID in the last 3 months, exponential growth, because they've men who have never had any problems. It's because what is going on in your head, anxiety, stress, worry, is going to directly impact your sexual health.
Yeah. So think about, anxiety causes a release of these chemicals in your brain called catecholamines. And it's kind of like a fight or fright response. And so essentially, if you're being chased by somebody with a gun or a knife, your body shunts all of its energy towards getting away from that danger. And so non-essential functions like an erection essentially go away. Your blood is shunted to your lungs, to your muscles, to your heart, essentially so that you can get out of this stressful situation. Now, your body can't differentiate between stress anxiety related to, say, a non-violent threat to stress anxiety that's related to a violent threat. So we kind of respond in the same way, and we see the same kind of response. And again, if you're scared, if you're in fear, if you've got anxiety, your catecholamines are flowing through your body. And these catecholamines, essentially, they raise your blood pressure, raise your heart rate, and they cause vasoconstriction of blood vessels. And that's the exact opposite of what you want to get an erection. You want vasodilation. You want those blood vessels to open up for that penis to fill up with blood. And so these guys are not able to get erections, or if they do, they get these staccato erections that go up and down, and they're not able to sustain these erections. And it was really striking to see how many people were affected by this. And, you know, I think we're blessed here on the West Coast because, you know, we don't live in these high density buildings. We kind of have backyards. We have storage space. So, you know, you could have some supplies so you don't feel like one day you might run out of toilet paper or something.
Right.
But you can imagine if somebody's living in New York City in one of those high density high rises or in the middle of San Francisco in a high density high rise with no outdoor space, no storage space, relying on daily, eating out because people live in New York, a lot of people do that kind of stuff. But imagine if you're quarantined in that environment, how horrible is that? And I really felt for the people in New York because I thought that, you know, as bad as it was for me or anyone out here, it must have been 10 times worse for them.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I've heard just horror stories and I have a lot of friends' parents who were stuck in buildings in New York. And it's just, there's been a lot of stressors. So I want to go back to something though for a moment. So what would you do then if I was a, 26-year-old man coming in and I've never had these problems before? Like how do you work with them? From a standpoint, because if it is stress and anxiety, are you like, namaste, like, let's meditate, let's breathe? I mean, what do you do?
Well, the first,
I know there's not a quick fix for that.
Right. You're absolutely right. But, you know, the first point is to recognize that what is the cause of the problem. And so educating these guys, a 25-year-old guy who does not have acute onset of erectile dysfunction. I mean, in order to get acute onset erectile dysfunction, you got to take a new drug that is known to cause erectile dysfunction, have a recent surgery that can cause erectile dysfunction. And so that once they understand that this is not really a permanent state of their being, and this is probably related to their current condition, a lot of them relax. And I did a lot of Zoom calls with these guys. You know, we started doing Zoom telehealth visits and just coaching these guys and just talking to them and reassuring them that things are going to get better once the pandemic's over and we're able to get out there and socialize again.
Yeah.
Can you imagine people who don't have a partner in this during this time? I was asking some of my patients who were single.
Hi, right here. I don't have a partner in this time. Yes, I can imagine me not having a partner in this time. Yes, very, very clearly, I imagine, every day.
I'm sure Tinder and Bumble were completely out of business for like the last, 3 months.
No, actually been booming. I just don't do the apps. And I've had lovers, let's just say they're just not here in the Los Angeles area right now. People are dating online now more than ever, actually, because that's how you're going to meet people. And people are actually slowing down and actually courting people and getting to know. And there's like connecting more. So I think it's actually a good thing.
Actually going out and meeting them, or are they just talking online the whole time?
Well, I think that now people are like, okay, it's over, I'm out, let's go. But what I liked about it was that people are slowing down and like courtship is coming back. And so when they couldn't meet right away, we actually did like a contest. We were asking the listeners, like, what are your quarantine love stories? Have you fell in love over COVID? We had a couple call in and they met. They hadn't met yet in person, but we did a Zoom with them and they were already planning getting married and buying a house together. We should actually follow up with them and see if they've actually met. But they were like living very far apart. Like he's in Canada and she was like in Georgia. But anyway, but people are, they're just sort of, going a little bit deeper and finding out about like, do we have the same values? Do we want the same things in life rather than like, you're hot, let's bang. So I kind of like that. But now I think people are desperate. Not desperate, but people haven't had sex. I'm not going out doing that, having random acts of sex, but I just haven't had time is the thing.
What do you get any sense from all the people that listen to your show that the incidence of Zoom sex has skyrocketed, or like what would be like phone sex or
FaceTime sex? Absolutely. Yeah. I've answered so many more questions about that from people who are like, what do we do? I would never have felt comfortable before. And so we talk a lot about, mutual masturbation. How do you do it? How do you make it comfortable? Don't just do it with some guy you've had one, or anybody you've had one random date with on Tinder, because people, you can actually record that as well. And also telling people that it's, you don't have to just be like, okay, I'm naked, let's be on FaceTime, but it's kind of like a date. You still would tease and you would get to know each other and you could just show some body parts if you'd like, or you could show your face and not your genitals, or genitals and not your face. So yeah, there's sort of an art to it.
Yeah,
so it's been an interesting time. Just so
you know. I can imagine.
That's what's been happening here. And then you're getting probably the people you said who are living maybe with partners. I thought what I've noticed that there's people who have been living at home and then they're quarantined and they've been having sex challenges before COVID. And now they're like, well, I can't run. I can't hide. I got to deal with this now. And so I feel like we were getting a lot more questions about, you know, erectile dysfunction or inability to orgasm and all the things. You guys, I have Dr. Edward Cartman here. And it is Men's Health Week, Men's Health Month, but we're taking a week. We are celebrating it. And we're talking about anything you, if you have prostate challenges, sexual dysfunctions, low testosterone, questions about circumcision. I'm trying to think of all the penis questions we've been getting lately. Okay. So the other things are, so that's what's happening. So you've had them coming in to your office and asking these questions. So what else has been going on? Is there anything else that has been sort of, let's just say, in this year, perhaps, or things that you've noticed that, like the has there been anything else? Well, let's just say related to COVID. Besides that, like any like consequences? We're talking about people who want like elective surgery and what to do right now if you have to actually go to the hospital after right now.
So the first thing I think that people should know is that hospitals now, after this initial scare, have become extremely safe. And I tell people that if you're comfortable going to the grocery store, you should be comfortable going to the hospital for anything that you need done. And in fact, it's probably safer, in my opinion, because number one, at least in my hospital, El Camino Hospital, every personnel, staff, nurse, doctor is being tested for COVID. Every patient that's coming in for surgery is being tested for COVID within 72 hours of their surgery. So you can't say the same for the grocery store. You go in there and you know, who knows who's next to you. We have PPE equipment all over the place in the hospital. We have a ton of masks, gloves. Everyone's wearing masks and gloves. And we have alcohol, hand sanitizer.
I was like, there's a bar in the hospital? That's brilliant. But you meant alcohol. Okay, got it.
Yeah, not that kind of bar.
Got it.
So there's it's really a safe place to be. And that's really been the biggest challenge, is now having people understand that, okay, it's safe to come back to the hospital. Because one of the things that people are doing is they're neglecting a lot of their routine kind of healthcare maintenance stuff, like cancer screenings, mammograms for women, rectal exams for men, colonoscopies, things that we look for regularly for, you know, the most common cancers, for heart disease. People are neglecting those things right now because they're so scared of COVID, they're not coming there. But when they realize that it's actually safe to come back to the hospital, then they start kind of, you know, tipping their toe in the water and realizing, yeah, it's not bad. I have to tell you that.
I'm so glad you're saying this, because people need to hear this. It's important not to skip those routine exams.
It is. And, you know, there's going to be a consequence that we're going to have to somehow calculate of the quarantine. So the cure is going to have its own, you know, consequences and deaths and mortalities, because, you know, people who commit suicide because of depression, people who didn't go to the hospital with chest pain ended up dying of a heart attack, people who neglected their cancer screening and let their cancers go awry. You know, there's going to be a consequence to this, you know, down the road. And I don't know how we're going to quantify this, but there is going to be. And I just hope that people understand that so that they don't neglect themselves because of this COVID fear. COVID can be avoided, or getting COVID can be avoided, if you take the necessary precautions. And I think the healthcare system, the hospitals, are the first people and the most capable to make sure that the environment is safe for people to come back and get their surgery. Now, interestingly, I have to say that the guys who want their penises fixed have been probably the first guys to run to the hospital and say, okay, I'm ready to get it fixed. And we had this interesting phenomenon because, you know, we had 6 to 8 weeks of no surgeries where we couldn't do any elective surgeries. And I had, you know, my operating room waiting list was probably 4 to 6 weeks deep. And so we had to cancel all these surgeries and tell guys, sorry, we just can't do it right now. And, you know, these guys were then stuck with their partner without an erection at home. Now, can you imagine how frustrating that would be?
That sounds horrible. You got to be stuck with your partner and there's no erection? It's like, what else are we going to do? Yeah. That's, especially if you were looking forward to it.
Exactly.
Your surgery or whatever it was they were doing.
Yeah. And conversely, the guys who got in just before the shutdown happened, they got their surgeries done, got to enjoy this period. You know, it's an interesting time because it really unearthed the people's true feelings for each other. So, and I'm sure you've heard this probably from some of your viewers, but you either realize that you really love the person you're with, or you really hate them. You can't stand them, because spending this much time with somebody really kind of unearths that, those true feelings that somebody has. So you can't go run away from your partner and hide at the office, or, go on those business trips. Now you have to face the music and you have to deal with this person on a daily basis. And that really, it really tested a lot of people's relationships, I think.
Absolutely. It's kind of like a truth serum, because I don't think that COVID is what's tearing people apart. Like, it was because we were home. It's that there were already underlying issues or challenges. Like, if you were just craving each other and someone was traveling all the time and you didn't have enough time together, and then you got to be home together, it was probably delightful for many of those couples. But if you were already like, I'm not sure, and then you were home every day, it was like, you know, it didn't work. So yeah. I think in a way it's leveled the playing field, and there's just been a lot of people. I think, you know, I think in a way I like it, because it speeds things up. Because you could, you know, I don't know about you, but I've been in relationships where I stayed way too long. I used to say, like, I spent half my relationships trying to get out of them. It was one of my patterns I've moved through in my life. But, you know, when you know it's over. But sometimes we just stay because it's easier. I'm going to wait till after the wedding, or, you know, my friend's wedding, or the parent family's for Christmas. And then you just keep waiting and waiting. And then, like, years go by. I want to talk to Edward, 25, in California. Hi, Edward. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking me.
Of course.
I have a question for Dr. Cartman. I'm 25 years old, and my issue is not being able to finish, but the issue is finishing too fast sometimes. And I know my girlfriend likes it when I last longer than usual. That's the only way that she can come. And sometimes I'm able to last till she can come, and then I can come. But it's kind of painful sometimes right after you come, and, you know, you're still having sex, and it's not even pleasure at times for men. And once a man comes, he just wants to kind of stop, because it doesn't really feel as good as it does before. But my question is there some kind of exercise or something that I could do naturally to improve my, you know, my duration, so that I'm not coming as fast.
Yeah. It's a great question, Ed. And I'm taking this call because I'm so glad you called, because this is one of the most common penis questions we get asked about, you know, essentially premature ejaculation, getting finishing before you want to, and what to do. So I got a question for you, Edward. Is this something that's happened to you before in your history, sexual history?
No, I think my whole sexual history, I think I've always came fast. I mean, I could do it multiple times a day, but
right.
I've always wanted, this girlfriend that I've been with, I've only been with her for 2 months now. And my exes before in the past, they would come really fast just with me. Like, we both come at the same time. But this one's a little bit, this one takes a little bit more longer to come herself. And wanted to improve the relationship.
Yes, or improve your stamina. I think you're right. I think it's a great question. And also, I would say that a lot of the women we might have been with didn't finish. And I'm not going to say it's because of you, but women typically take longer to orgasm, and most don't actually come during intercourse. Just to tell you that there's stuff you can still do, even if you come too quickly. And we're going to answer your question in a minute. But for many women, it's just if you're with a woman, making sure that she's pleased before you actually have intercourse, she has her orgasm. But that's not what you're calling about. I get that. So you're talking about exercises to last longer. We talk about this a lot, but I'd like to hear from Dr. Cartman. What do you do about this? Do people come, you know?
Yeah. So Emily, you asked a great question. And essentially what you're asking is, do you have acquired or lifelong premature ejaculation? And it sounds like, Edward, you have acquired premature ejaculation, meaning that it's not been a problem in the past. And the question I have for you, how long does it take you to come?
Yeah.
It takes me about 4 to 5 minutes, and then I come. And it takes her usually about 8 to 10.
Okay. Hmm. So by the definition of premature ejaculation, which is less than a minute, technically you don't have it, okay? But I always say this to my patients, it doesn't matter what the definitions say. If your partner takes a minute or a second longer than you, then it's a problem. So 4 to 5 minutes is not really bad. Okay, we have guys who are coming in who are, you know, within 30 seconds, you know, blowing their load. And that's a problem. That's a real problem. and I've had some really refractory cases of premature ejaculation. I want you to know that it is the most common sexual dysfunction that men have between the ages of 18 and 59. So you're not alone. It's a common problem, okay? And what can you do about it? Well, naturally, there's a thing called the squeeze technique. And it's essentially a form of behavioral modification. So if you are having sex with your partner, now this is going to have to take buy-in from your partner, because it works better if you do it with your partner than if you do it by yourself. But if you're having sex with your partner and you're reaching that point where you're about to climax, you're going to have to pull out, squeeze the head of your penis, the glands, really, like almost giving yourself a painful stimulus. Make that, you know, because obviously when you're having pain, you're not going to orgasm. Give yourself enough pain that it aborts the orgasm, wait a few seconds, and then go back to work and try doing that. That would be the natural way to do it. Now, it's difficult to get your partner to do that if you're not in a real stable, understanding relationship. You could try doing this on your own also when you masturbate, but it doesn't work as well. The other thing is, how much porn do you watch?
I watch porn on the daily.
On the daily.
Yeah, that's part of it. You said you can come all day, a few times a day. So, yeah, I would say take a look at that. I mean, yeah, Dr. Carbon, you've probably seen a lot with porn lately. So,
yeah, there's just been a lot of porn watch. I hear Pornhub has its highest viewers since COVID started.
Welcome to COVID, right?
The problem with porn, and I tell people it's like alcohol. Okay, if you can use it in moderation, there's no problem with it. But if you use it excessively, you're going to get into problems with it. So when you masturbate, same thing. So masturbation is not bad, but if you masturbate too much and you watch too much porn, it could be problematic. Why is that? Well, when you're masturbating, there's only one thing you have to buy. And sometimes we do it because it relieves stress. It helps us fall asleep. It just gets our mind off whatever. And we go out there, rub one out, and, you know, just we do it for reasons other than just to have fun. It's just almost kind of stress relief, you know? And we forget that what we're doing is we're conditioning ourselves then to do that the rest of the time when we're not trying to relieve stress. So if you masturbate a lot and you do it to relieve stress or because you're bored, whatever, and you have nobody to satisfy, you just do it. And whenever the urge comes, you let it rip and you go, and then you go about your business and you do whatever you want it to do. But then you come back to your partner, and your partner doesn't want you to just get it over with really quickly. They want to enjoy the act. And so you carry over this behavioral habit into your relationship. So I would be careful with the consumption of porn and masturbation, and use it not sparingly, but don't overuse, don't overindulge in masturbation and pornography, because it will kind of reset your thermostat as to when you're supposed to climax.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing
Thank
I want
you.
To say, Edward.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, Edward, I also want to say one more thing. Is that something that I recommend is you're asking for an exercise, is a stop-start method. And that's a kind of edging, as we call it. So when you are masturbating, instead of maybe, you know, if you could do this without porn, which I recommend, is practice this exercise. This actually works. And this is a method where you're masturbating until the point where you're about to ejaculate. So you're edging up to that. And then right before, you slow it down. And then you kind of start to notice, well, this is when I'm going to start to go over. And then you just practice that. So you're stopping and you're starting. And that's when you can start to kind of practice it. Also doing your Kegels for men, that can be helpful. Doing the Kegel exercises, strengthening those muscles. And then the other thing I would say is there is something called Promescent. And it's the only, it's a treatment that is for premature ejaculation that you apply before it helps you last, like, I think it's like 60% longer in bed. You can get it without a prescription, and it's a topical spray. And it's, you know, it's great. I mean, so many men like it. They use it. You wait 10 minutes, it won't transfer to your partner. So those are and also if you go to sexwithemily.com, we can actually put some posts on the show notes right now at sexwithemily.com. And we have some great blog posts on how to last longer in bed. So we talk about it a lot, Edward.
Yeah, I'll try those exercises. Thank you for that.
Yeah, of course. Thank you, Edward. Thank you for calling. Great to talk to you. Okay, Dr. Cartman, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome seeing you. I so appreciate you and your time and your insights. And I hope that you're doing well and staying safe. And I would love to see you here in Los Angeles when you are, when we can, when this is over, which I think is soon. Going to be soon.
I hope. Right. Yeah. And we're no longer 6 feet apart.
Exactly. Exactly. All of that. So people can find you at healthy-mail.com.
Yep.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Cartman, for being here. I appreciate
you. Thanks for having me.